In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising, mountain motoring, or redwood roaming, discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, I'm your host, K-Town, and I'm glad to have you back with me for another edition of Mysterious Radio. Tonight, it's more paranormal. True ones. I can't bring anybody on here that's not going to, divulge true things. But this one's going to be a treat because this particular gentleman has been on the show several times, more than several times, and he's a professor at a college in Alabama. And I'm talking about Dr. Alan Brown, who has written a book called Haunted Pensacola. I chose him to come back on the show to talk about Pensacola because I do love Florida. So much. I can't even put into words how much I love Florida. But apparently Pensacola is extremely haunted. I would say Florida overall is a very, very haunted state. And this is going to be a treat if you want to hear about Pensacola. Maybe you vacation down there or you have family down there or whatever, or you're just interested in it. This is going to be good. His book is available on Amazon along with all of his others. So pick them up right now on Kindle Unlimited. It's free. So you can also pick it up on paperback and hardcover as well. There's something about a paperback book for me. I need a book in my hand. Anyway, I hope you guys have enjoyed the editions that we've been releasing so far. I do have more coming up. I'm going to be releasing more conspiracy type shows. So I have a couple of those lined up for you. As well as I'm going to be having Nick Pope on the show. I haven't had him on yet. And he's going to be in Knoxville for an evening of aliens. It's actually a one-day event at the UT Conference Center. He's going to be there. And I'm going to be having Peter Robbins on the show as well. I do have a ton more that I'm going to cover for you guys. So I got some surprises. And I know you're going to enjoy it. I want to say thank you very much for continuing to support this show. It means more to me than you will ever know, more to all of us than you will ever know. All right, it's time for you to pull up a chair and sit down right beside me as I welcome our special guest, Dr. Alan Brown, here to discuss his new book called Haunted Pensacola. All right. right. My special guest tonight is Dr. Alan Brown, and he's returning to the show to talk about another one of his fantastic books. It's called Haunted Pensacola, and you can pick this one up as well as all of his others on Amazon.com. Dr. Brown, I want to thank you very much for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to ask you, now, it's been maybe a couple of years since you've been on the show. Are you still teaching?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm going to continue teaching until I don't enjoy it anymore.
You are? Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I turned 70 in January, but I still like what I'm doing.
Well, so, that's awesome.
I know. I'm going to keep at it. And the good thing about teaching at the college level is that I have time to write these books. And the school also supports me in my ghost story collecting trips. So that's a plus, too. That's another reason why I'm going to hang around there for a while longer.
Oh, yeah, that is very good. Now, I talked to one other professor. He's out in California, and he talked to his school, and now they actually allow him to teach paranormal studies. So, I mean,
really?
He really loves it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have thought about teaching it as a night course. I know some colleges do that. Some junior colleges teach it as a night course. It's, I think it's like a hands-on ghost hunting course. I know of one in Illinois that a friend of mine teaches. And if we ever start a night school here, I think I'll do it.
Oh,
just
yeah.
For fun.
Yeah, yeah, that will be great there. Have you been on any ghost hunts lately or anything like that?
Well, kind of. My wife and I, last July, my wife and I went to Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Stayed at the hotel there, which used to be a tuberculosis sanitarium. And, well, it was a fake sanitarium. The man who ran it was a charlatan. And the we stayed in a room where a woman had died of cancer. And she was in great pain when she died. My wife and I tried to make contact with her. We couldn't. She was very unresponsive. I couldn't get any EVPs. Could not get any orbs. So the next morning, I went to the car. Took the suitcase to the car. My wife was sitting inside the room, and she said that when I came back, she was just pale and shaking. I asked what happened, and she said, well, my Yeti glass, which was sitting on the coffee table, flew about 4 feet off the table. It didn't fall. It flew off. And hers was perfectly okay. And she thinks that because my wife had cancer, she had breast cancer, because she had cancer, she thinks she had this affinity with this spirit who did not like men, apparently, because the man who ran this asylum was, as I said, was a charlatan who just took advantage of his patients. And so that's the first time that's ever happened to her. And I believe her totally, 100%.
Yeah.
No reason not to.
That's pretty scary, actually. I think that would have shook me up. I wouldn't have been in the room waiting on you when you came back.
Yeah, well, she we told the manager, and she said, "But asked if we had recorded it," and I said, "No. We didn't expect anything to happen. We were disappointed, and it happened just before we left." And so we were pleased, although we didn't really get any evidence of it.
Well, it's all right. I mean, it seems like, you know, something always happens to your wife. Like, she's always the one that's attracting the attention from the paranormal, it seems.
Yeah, She's the sensitive. She's the one that who doesn't. Well, when we first started going to these places, she said that she didn't believe in any of this stuff because she's a math teacher, very logically minded. But all these things happen. Do these spirits seem to gravitate toward her? Not to me. I'm the one that wants to see these things, and but they go to her, which is ironic. And so she, but she's good natured about it. Although this is the first time I've really seen her scared.
Okay. All right. Would you? I mean, do you think she would? She would go back there?
Yeah, I think so. As oh, the name I didn't give the name. It's the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And
okay, yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's very famous, and I mean it's beautiful. And if you just want to stay in the lap of luxury for a weekend, I'd recommend it. And they even give ghost tours there. And
oh, they do. Okay. Did you guys take the tour when you were there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we went down to the morgue. the morgue's pretty cool. The interesting thing is, the morgue tables are still there where they laid out the patients.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah, they're there. But there were rumors that the man who ran the sanitarium had jars with tumors that he had cut out, and he kept them down there. But years ago, before he was sent to prison, he got rid of them, and no one knew where they were. Well, last spring, they were expanding the parking lot of the Crescent Hotel, and they found them. They found a cache of these, and the tumors were in liquid in these. It's very, very, it's disgusting. I've seen some pictures of them. And so it's true. It's always cool when legends like these are verified.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was, that made the national news.
All right, so are you writing any new books right now?
Well, I've got two that are coming out now. One just came out. It's called Eerie Alabama, and it is mysteries and legends from Alabama. And the other one is called The Unexplained South, and it's mysteries and legends from the entire South, which includes ghost stories, but also cryptozoology, monsters, strange disappearances, UFOs.
Oh, that's awesome. I will definitely have to get you back to talk about those two. So one of them's already out. Which one's already out?
Eerie Alabama is out now.
Okay.
In fact, I've got a 5 or 6 book signings throughout the state of Alabama. Now, The Unexplained South is going to be sold only at Books A Million stores. And that one is, I think it's in the warehouse. I don't think they put it on the shelves yet. I've been checking around. But it should, I would think within the next month, that should be out. But yeah, I'll be happy to talk about both those sometime if you want me to.
Good. Absolutely. All right. Now, for those that haven't heard you before, and you've been on here at least 4 times, just one of my all-time favorite guests, and I do highly recommend all your books. But before we get into it, can you tell my listeners about yourself and what got you started into researching the paranormal?
Well, I'm a professor of English at the University of West Alabama. This is my 33rd year there. I got interested, I've always been interested in weird things like monsters, ghosts. That goes back to my childhood when I was 11 or 12 or 13 and started watching old horror movies on TV, the Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff films. And then when I was older, I watched the Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing films, and still watch them, by the way. I think they're great. And then when I started working, moved down south from Illinois, I started working at the University of West Alabama. I found out about a woman named Ruby Pickens Tard, who was a folklorist during the 1930s. She worked for the WPA, and she collected folk tales, legends from the Deep South. And a lot of these were ghost stories. And a couple years after I started working there, I met Catherine Turker Windham, who another folklorist, a lady from Selma, Alabama, who wrote a series of books on Southern ghosts, like 13 Alabama Ghosts and Jeffrey's the Ghost in Her House. And they're very good. And that's, I decided that's what I wanted to do. And my first ghost book came out in 1993. I've been publishing them ever since. And most of what I've written are ghost books. I've written over 30 books. And it's a hobby. It's something I do for fun. And I'll tell you, it really makes me feel good when people read my books and tell me that they enjoyed them and learned something. I like entertaining and educating at the same time, which is why I provide historical background to these sites and then talk about these encounters that people have had there.
In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising, mountain motoring, or redwood roaming, discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Yeah, well, your books are amazing. I mean, they really are. You can tell you're very passionate about it because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you can tell it in your writing, but also when you talk about it, too. I mean, you do remember a lot of the details, and that's what really makes your interview so enjoyable.
I feel, these people tell me these stories, and because they know, I've been in this long enough, they know me by reputation, they know I'm not going to mock them or make fun of them. I treat the material that they give me respectfully, I think that's important. I think people, if you are going to write books like these, people entrust you with their experiences, and you have an obligation to do right by them. And this is what I try to do when I write up their stories in my books.
Yeah, very good. All right, now. Pensacola apparently is a very haunted city. I mean, I had no idea really, but I'm not surprised given that, you know, they've had a lot of tragic events to hit that state overall over the years.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For those that don't know anything about Pensacola or where it is for that matter, Dr. Brown, can you tell us where it is and why you wanted to write about its haunted history?
Well, it's in the panhandle. It's in the western part of the state. It's very close to Alabama, which is one reason why I wanted to go there. I had heard for years that it had a long haunted history, and it's not very far from where I live, and so that was attractive too. I didn't have to drive very far to go there. I spent three or four days there, taking photographs, interviewing people, visiting these sites, taking tours, I'll tell you the neat thing about Pensacola. If you like seafood, oh my goodness, the restaurants are to die for. They're really, really good, I found the people to be very warm. And here's another thing about Pensacola. They respect their own history, which is why so many of these historic buildings are still standing. And they go to great lengths to preserve them, too, because they know that that's one of the reasons people come there.
Right. I don't understand why. And it's really this way all over the United States. You don't really see a lot of the really old buildings preserved like you do, say, in, you know, the UK. But here, it just kills me to see them tear down a beautiful old building and put up something that's, you know, just regular brick and mortar, no character. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, that's true. But I do think the South, though, I think that the South has more respect as a whole. Now, that's just totally true, but I think Southerners respect their history.
I do, too. I would agree with that.
Than they do other parts of the country.
Right.
Because for many white Southerners, the antebellum past, that was their glory days. It wasn't for the slaves who had to work on those plantations, but it was for a lot of people. And as I said, a lot of white people, probably the upper 10%. I mean, not all white people lived in mansions, huge mansions with Doric columns. That's not true. But I think many people, especially in small towns, they kind of live vicariously through these old houses. They dress up in the hoop skirts and they give tours, and it's a way of celebrating a past, but they're celebrating the myth of the past, and I think that's important.
Right.
No.
Right.
It's not the real history of the South that you often see celebrated at these at some of these old buildings, old plantation homes.
All right. Now, so before we get into the details, quickly, but you know, during your research, and I know you had to look at this to try and see why it's so haunted. And I want you to tell us what you've learned about some of the things. You know, it's just horrible to hear it, but they have had a lot of, you know, tragic accidents and things that have happened there. So can you tell us about some of that?
Well, some of the catastrophes are natural. Hurricanes, for example. There are a number of stories about dealing with nature, the fury of nature. Then you have, of course, the Civil War, which has left its impact throughout the South. You have the sad legacy of slavery, which is everywhere in the South, including Pensacola. You have the Civil War forts, the old brick and mortar forts down there, masonry forts, which are still standing. A lot of terrible things happened there. Interesting thing about Pensacola is you've even got pirate stories in Pensacola. They had pirates. They had, in the 20s. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a story about a woman who was, this is in the early 1800s. She and her father were well-to-do. They were walking down the street, and a pirate was taken with this young lady, and he grabbed her, and she tore away from him. Her father pushed the guy away. The pirate shot him. And the young woman started beating him, and the pirate took out his cutlass. Oh, she poked out his eye. I believe that. I think she stuck her thumb in his eye. He drew his cutlass and lopped off her head. And so her headless corpse is seen walking around the street in Pensacola. There are a lot of other stories about convicts, there's a story. Pensacola was also had a red light district, which I wrote about in the book.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about that. And it's haunted.
Yeah. I've
never heard of one being haunted. So go ahead and tell us about that.
Yeah, well, this was back when, in the early 1900s, when sailors from the Navy Yard would come to Pensacola on leave. And there was a red light district that was prostitution wasn't really legal, but it was tolerated, we'll say that. And so the girls that worked there and knew their limitations. They never left the district. They stayed there. And the sailors would would spend some time here. There were some brothels that were higher class than others. And so the big spenders would go there. Story goes that after they were finally shut down, well, finally the Navy put an end to it. And they were shut down, I believe, in the 40s. And there are three, it goes to three women that are seen walking around the streets where the where the line used to be. And occasionally people say that a woman comes up and touches her shoulder and then disappears. So that's also part of the history of Pensacola, which, and you're going to see that in any port town, port city.
Yeah. When they say they see these women, are they often, or any of these, you know, ghosts or whatnot, are they saying that they see them as like as real as you and I standing there, or do they look like they are translucent, you know, like they can see through, I mean, transparent, like they can see through them, or how are they describing these ghosts?
Well, now, this is a case where the women are dressed in pre-World War I fashions. So they stand out for that. That's why people take notice of them. I don't think it's because they're transparent or translucent or anything like that. I think it's just that they appear, it looks like they're wearing costumes, and then they just kind of slowly vanish when they realize that people are staring at them. But I think they look like they're flesh and blood.
Okay.
Now, that's not true of all the spirits in Pensacola, but that is true of the ones in the line.
Okay. All right. Interesting there. I want to talk about one of the most beautiful bed and breakfasts that I've ever seen. And I want to stay. I want to go to Pensacola just to stay at this one. And it's the Noble Manor Bed and Breakfast.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. It is immaculate. And whoever owns that place really takes care of it. You stay there, though, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I can honestly say that I've been to almost every one of these places that I wrote about. My wife and I kept busy driving everywhere in Pensacola. Yes, I like the Noble Manor Bed and Breakfast, too. It's it just looks, you can tell that a lot of love went into restoring that house. And it's one of those places where they will talk about the ghosts. If you ask them, and I think that's true of most of these haunted sites in Pensacola, they don't push it. They won't push it on you, push the stories on you. But if you ask, they'll be happy to tell you. And that was the case here. There was a woman, for example, who was went to the bathroom, and she was taking a shower, and the doorknob, someone was rattling the doorknob. She thought it was her husband, and she said, she yelled, "I'm in here." When she finished, she went back outside and asked her husband why he had to get into the bathroom in such a hurry, and he said, well, he wasn't up there. He was in the bedroom the whole time. Another case, a woman was in the same bathroom, and she smelled smoke. Well, my wife and I stayed in the same room where these women had stayed, and I went in the bathroom and didn't smell anything. Came back, and my wife said that she smelled smoke in our bedroom. Well, I went in there, I lay down on the bed, and I smelled it too, but it wasn't an acrid smell. It was like pipe tobacco. And we found out later, afterwards, that the contractor's brother had just recently died, the contractor who helped renovate the house. And he was fond of smoking apple-flavored tobacco. And When you find out things, when your experiences get verified like that, it's just hard not to get goosebumps.
Right, right. Dr. Brown, did somebody die inside that house?
I don't know of anyone who died there. I don't think that's part of the. Now that's not to say they didn't. A lot of people died at home at this time. So it's possible that they did. But as I said, at least I don't know of any ghost stories connected to a specific death there. Now, there is another bed and breakfast where that is true, where someone did die. This is the, I believe it's the Victorian.
Is it the Grey House?
No, not the Grey House. It's the Victorian bed and breakfast. And that's the one where the sea captain, I believe it was a sea captain that built it. And his name was William Northrop. And he and his wife had several children. And at least one of them died in the house, I believe of yellow fever. And probably more, because yellow fever has really took its toll in places, like New Orleans and Pensacola in the 19th century. And the ghost of children are seen here play, and they're mischievous little spirits. They're not malicious. That's true of most children's ghosts. I think a lot of them are residual spirits who don't know that they're dead and they're still having fun. And I think that's true of these kids who did die there. Now, there is also a white lady, a lady in white, who is seen at the Victorian bed and breakfast. I think one of the first people to cite this apparition was a playwright who got up to go to go across the hall to the bathroom, and as he was walking across the hall, he happened to see a lady in a white nightgown. I believe she was barefoot, and she was walking into the room next to his. It's called the Elizabeth room. Well, the next morning, he told the owner of the bed and breakfast that he was glad that she was able to rent that room as well. And she said, "Oh no, I didn't. No one was there." And turns out other people had seen this lady in white as well. Now, whether or not she died there, we don't know. There's no real story attached to it. No one knows who she is. And those are the frustrating stories where you can't identify the spirit. But as I said, we're pretty sure that we know who these little kids are. They're probably the Northrop's children.
Well, you know what? That Victorian bed and breakfast is gorgeous as well. Did you stay there?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that lady was very nice. She, in fact, has invited psychics to come to her house and check it out, and it's got a good reputation as a haunted place, but it's also just a beautiful place to stay. So not everybody who goes there is looking for ghosts. Now I think the Crescent Hotel that I talked about in Eureka Springs, or the Myrtles down in St. Francisville, Louisiana. I think most of the people who go there probably are hoping to have some kind of paranormal encounter. That's not true, though, of the Noble House or the Victorian Bed and Breakfast.
Okay. All right. Now, when you stay there, was there other guests in there as well?
Well, I don't think so. I think Marilyn and I were by ourselves that night, and nothing really happened to us. You know, as I've said before on your show, ghosts don't perform on cue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
And That doesn't mean, though, that I didn't believe any of these stories that the lady told me.
Well, the reason why I ask is I was just wondering if you've ever, and, you know, I know that you stay at a lot of bed and breakfast, but I was wondering if you're able to, you know, chit chat with some of the other guests and see if they are having any type of experience while you're there, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I'm trying to think if we did meet anyone else. It wasn't a weekend. I think it was the middle of the week. It was during the summer that we went. So I don't think there were a lot of people at these places that we stayed at. Now, I have been at other places where guests have had experiences and have told us about them. Such as the Myrtles down in St. Francisville. That weekend we stayed, my wife and I stayed there. There was a woman and her daughter stayed at the room a little down the hall from us, and they went out to eat. They came back, went in the bathroom, and all the toilet paper had been totally unrolled from the spool. And another woman said that her jewelry was gone. I don't think her diamond earrings. I think they're just earrings she had taken off before she went to bed. And she stayed in a room where the owner of the Myrtle said that jewelry tends to disappear. It's not an employee who's stealing, and they find it eventually. And a lot of times it's in the backyard. For some reason, it's almost as if the spirit's hiding them or something.
It's in the backyard. That's funny.
Yeah. They'll find it in the dirt. And so she said, well, okay, now we'll keep a lookout for it. When we find your jewelry, we'll send it back to you. So leave your name and address. And that's fun. That's fun wasn't fun for the lady who lost her jewelry, but it is fun when you talk to people who have had strange things happen.
Yeah.
It's a way of assuring you yourself that you're not crazy.
Yeah, exactly. All right. My special guest tonight is Dr. Alan Brown, and we're discussing his book called Haunted Pensacola, and you can pick that up from Amazon. When we come back, we're going to talk about the haunted Naval Air Station down there in Pensacola. When we come back, right after this.
Parents, when you visit California, childhood rules. If you don't remember how awesome childhood is, just ask yourself,
what would kids do?
Let childhood rule your family vacation. Start planning your trip to the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Yes. Okay, we're back, and my special guest tonight is Dr. Alan Brown, and we are discussing his book called Haunted Pensacola. All right, now before we talk about the haunted Naval Air Station there, Dr. Brown, I want to first know, how did you go about your research for this part of it, for the Naval Air Station? Were you able to actually talk to some of the personnel, or how did you go about that?
No, I did not go to the Naval Air. Well, I drove around it. I did not go in it. That's one of the stories where I did the traditional kind of research, the book research, the internet research, that sort of thing. The stories I got were, these were tales that apparently had been passed around for a while because you would find the same stories in different publications. And those are the ones that seem to have, they have longevity. And, for example, the Naval Air Station was actually started as an aviation training station during World War One, and there are a couple of buildings there. that are really haunted, according to my sources. One of them is Building 16, and this is actually kind of a funny story. There was it was an officers' club back in the 20s, and there was a man named Captain Guy Hall who liked to play poker there, and he would place his bets by picking up a stack of poker chips and dropping them one by one on the table. I don't know why he did that. I would find that to be kind of annoying, actually. He died in a plane crash in 1926, and people have heard the sound of someone dropping poker chips on a table in the what used to be the game room. There is a ghost there that is not pleasant. This is Quarters A. It's the spirit of a man named Commodore Melancton T. Woolsey, who lived there at the turn of the century during one of the city's yellow fever epidemics, and he was paranoid that he would come down with yellow fever. And so he spent all the time in his house. This was originally a private home. He stayed in the cupola of the house, and he refused to go downstairs to eat. His orderly had to bring his food up to him, serving his meals. And ironically, despite all his efforts, he contracted yellow fever. He blamed it on the fact that his orderly forgot to put a bottle of rum in his food basket one evening, and he thought that was why he got yellow fever. Well, this is an angry spirit that yells at people. And this is not the kind of place I would want to spend a lot of time in, because they won't hear. They won't hear someone screaming and yelling and cussing. And I guess he's unhappy because he tried and tried and tried not to get this disease, but it happened anyway. So this is, the Naval Air Station is one that has been written about quite a bit. And it's a good, I'd like to get permission to visit it sometime.
Yeah. I was wondering if, you know, any personnel had an opportunity to talk to you, to tell you what they've seen or witnessed or whatnot. If you get that opportunity, please let me know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I would love to. Yeah.
Let's talk about Fort Pickens. I had no idea that it was near Santa Rosa Island, which is one of those spots that people really don't know a lot about. It's a very beautiful place to stay there in Florida. And apparently Fort Pickens is very haunted. Tell me what you found out about that place.
Fort Pickens is that's a pretty cool fort. It is one of those old masonry forts built between 1829 and 1834. It was built to defend Pensacola Bay at the time. It was in service during the Civil War. It was under siege by Confederate forces. the bombardment of Fort Pickens was tremendous. There were over 1,000 projectiles hit the fort, but amazingly, it did little damage to it. And it was the only one of Pensacola's four seacoast forts that did not surrender to the Confederacy. The other historical incident that occurred here that is significant was in October 25th, 1886, when Apache Chief Geronimo and 15 of his warriors were held prisoner here. And they cooked their own food over campfires. And they would, they had campfires all over the fort. And they whiled away the time by cutting grass and basically keeping the grounds clear of weeds and cactus. In 1887, tourists were allowed to visit the fort and catch a glimpse of Geronimo. And eventually, they were removed. Because mostly because of the deplorable living conditions that these Indians had, and they were transported to Mount Vernon Barracks north of Mobile. Some of the spirits that haunt Fort Pickens are said to be the ghosts of the Indians. No one has seen the Apaches, but they have seen what they think are campfires. There are all kinds of unnamed spirits, unnamed things that happen. They hear in the casements, people hear disembodied footsteps. People have the feeling that somebody is staring over their shoulder. They have heard work crews digging in the yard where nobody's present.
What about at night? Or will they allow people to, you know, maybe do a ghost tour at night there?
Now, that's a good question. I don't know, but I know a lot of places do. A lot of historic sites are starting to realize that they can make some extra money doing this. I didn't ask any of the people there if they can, but I do know that Vicksburg Battlefield has just started having all-night ghost tours, ghost walks there, where people can actually conduct investigations. The old state prison in Philadelphia, well, they've been doing this for at least 5 years. And they accept no groups with fewer than six people. I think each person, it costs like at least $75 for each person. I'm not positive about how much it costs, but now that's a case where they, you can take a historic tour during the day, but if you want to get have the ghost experience and you can, you're willing to pay a little extra, you can do it there. So more of these places are doing it. I'm not sure that Fort Pickens does, though.
What was I going to say? So right now it's just like a day tour as far as, because looked online. It looks like everybody's going through during the day and seeing any night things.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. All right. Now, so there's another one here I wanted to talk to you about, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Here it is. Now, I don't know how to pronounce this, Dr. Brown. You're going to correct me here, I'm sure. Is it called the Door House? Did you go in there? I mean, is that?
Well, it's actually the private home of the president of University of West Florida. I believe that's the name of it.
That's his home now.
That's his home, but the university allows tours to go there, and my wife and I took a tour. That's one of my favorite places in Pensacola because of the ghost stories are actually kind of funny. The lady who lived there was Clara Dorr, and she was she and her husband were wealthy. He made his money with a sawmill that he ran, and She died in 1896. The house was used as a school for a while. As I said, it's been lovingly restored. The docents, though, are the ones with the stories. For example, there is a... they have some chairs, some ornate chairs in the doorhouse that they call fainting chairs. And at this time, women had strapped themselves into those really tight corsets. And some of them, because, well, small waists were in vogue in the turn of the century. And some of these poor women would just faint and or get dizzy. And so they would plop down in these chairs. The ghost of one of these women has been seen in this one chair. I guess she must like it. I don't know, but she returns to that chair frequently. And there was a docent who was giving a tour, and she was talking about Mrs. Dorr, and she described her as being, I think, pleasantly plump, and someone pushed her from behind. So apparently Mrs. Dorr does not like to have people talk about her weight. There was another docent who was upstairs and was standing in front of a floor-length mirror, and she felt someone behind her tugging on her dress, and she thinks that Mrs. Dorr disapproved of her short skirt, and so she was careful not to wear short dresses on the tours, subsequent tours there.
I want to ask you this. Okay, so if I want to go there, are they given tours? Is this like a daily thing, or do they do this at a certain period of time?
I don't know what the hours are. I'm sure that you could get on their website and find out.
Okay, mentioned a translucent lady that's seen dancing in the house upstairs.
Yes. That was, no one really knows who that is. But she is very picky about her furniture. So if the furniture is moved from one room to the next or moved to a different spot in the same room, she makes an appearance. I think this is how she communicates. That's how she expresses her displeasure, by suddenly appearing and scaring people. I think she's probably the only apparition, full body apparition that ever appears in the doorhouse.
Dr. Brown, do you know if anybody's been able to conduct a paranormal investigation in that house?
I don't think so. My guess would be no.
Do you think they would allow it, or is that a no?
You'd probably have to check with the University of West Florida and see, or call the house up itself and ask them. That would be a great place. That'd be a wonderful place to investigate.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
They'd allow you. I don't know what they would. I will say that the one place I'd love to investigate is the Pensacola Lighthouse. Now, the TAPS, Ghost Hunting Group, has been there. They conducted an investigation there. And I'm not exactly sure what they found there, but they did get some pretty compelling evidence.
Who do you think is haunting that, like the lighthouse keeper or
See, the legend that people have been telling for years and years about the Pensacola Lighthouse is that there was a lighthouse keeper. Actually, I think he was the first lighthouse keeper who, his name was Jeremiah Ingram. He was, he started working there in 1824, and in 2 years, he got very lonely there all by himself, so then he got married to a woman named Michaela. And legend has it that in 1840, that she murdered him. No one knows exactly why. I think I think this story arose because of blood stains that are on the floor, the pine boards of the floor of the bedroom in the keeper's quarters. Well, there's no evidence at all that this happened. None of the legal documents, none of the history books record a murder having occurred there. There is, however, a story of a woman, the wife of one of the lighthouse keepers, who had a baby in that room around the time of the Civil War. And so they're thinking, a lot of people think, well, that's what that blood is. It's not, you know, blood from the White House keeper having his throat cut or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
Now, there is evidence that at least one of the lighthouse keepers is still on duty. And I think my favorite ghost story, has to do with a young man who was who stayed there with his family in the lighthouse keepers from 1931 to 1953 when his father manned the lighthouse, and he said one night when I think he was 10, his mother said that she heard a creaking sound on the wooden stairs in the keeper's quarters. So he got out of bed and went down the hallway, and he yelled, "Who's there?" Well, he didn't get a reply, but he heard the front door open and close. So he ran to the window and looked outside, and he saw the gate open in the front yard. He saw the gate open and close. So it was as if somebody had walked out of the house and down the sidewalk and through the gate. They had heard footsteps many times after that in the keeper's quarters. Hammett himself said that he was, Hatton said that there were times when he would be up in the tower, pulling on the rope, trying to rotate the lens, and he'd feel someone breathing behind him. And that happened several times. That would suggest to me that the person that was there was probably a spectral lighthouse keeper.
Yeah,
but there are all kinds of stories that have happened there.
Fantastic. I really, really love hearing your stories, Dr. Brown. I'm going to have to wrap it up now. But before we go, please tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you and anything else you're working on.
Well, my my books are available on Amazon. And I am also working on a website that is called The Ghost Doctor. And I've got some students who are helping me with it, and hopefully we'll get this. I will be able to launch this within a month or so. My books are available in Barnes & Noble and Books A Million, as well as a variety of private bookstores throughout the South.
Very good. Many blessings to you, Dr. Brown, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, that was fun. I really enjoyed him. His book, again, is Haunted Pensacola. Pick that up if you are a fan of the paranormal. You won't be bored one bit. And if you are an avid book reader and you order the books that our guest put out, which I hope you do, please make sure you take the extra step to leave them a nice rating and review. And you can, you know, mention that you heard them interview on Mysterious Radio, which is great because that brings awareness to the show as well. Okay. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition. I will have a couple of other shows released for you guys for Christmas. I want to thank my producer, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I hope that we can do this again, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.
In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising,
mountain motoring, or redwood roaming. Discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.